This episode of Sewing Out Loud is brought to you by the Made to Measure Leggings class from SewHere.com. This online class brings ZD right into your sewing room to show you how to measure, draft, and construct a pair of leggings based on your personal measurements. Go to SewHere.com/leggings to find out more and get access to all the videos and course materials immediately. That's SewHere.com/leggings.
Welcome to Sewing Out Loud, the official podcast of ZD Sewing Studio. Here are your hosts, ZD and Mallory.
Sewing Out Loud. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Mallory Donahue.
And I'm ZD Donahue.
And before we get started on today's episode, just going to do a little shout out to Rachel Creamer. She says she's been, her sojo has been held hostage for a few weeks. But
yeah, but she's got a big sojo too.
Now it's
right.
It's coming back. She says she's bought 20 yards of fabric and have been making plans for fall sweaters. And she accompanied this post with a picture of herself in her "I am a sewing machine" T-shirt.
There you go.
And we're glad your sojo is coming back, Rachel. You know, life is still rough, everybody.
It is
still collectively rough. And then if anything has happened to you outside of the pandemic, it's probably hit 10 times as hard.
Well, everything that hits feels harder, sadder,
Difficult
to deal with, whatever.
I don't know what the word is. Okay, so in French, the word for like difficult is like dur. And I just think that's a really good word. Like it gets across the feeling, like you have to so it's probably related to the word like endure, you know, and
right.
I'm like, yes, like I just feel this word. I like, nice, mom.
Yeah,
you know, we talked about French class and me painting that monster thing.
Yes, using my 20
and
whatever,
$25, $50, $75,
sure,
$110
right.
You know, a yard.
I paid
that was 20 years ago, right?
I was gonna say, I paid $25 a yard for it like in the 80s, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's $1 million yard. Anyway, my French teacher asked me if my parents spoke French at home because my accent was so good. So anyway, I just thought I'd let you know. And no. No one spoke French around me. I'm very good.
Jerry used to speak German. Some.
Yeah, I'm very good at
I spoke some
copying.
Spanish.
Yeah. I'm very good at copying.
You're very good at emulating and imitating.
I'm a mimic.
Yes.
You're
a mimicker.
That comes from listening to show tunes.
I think so.
Because when I would listen to the show tunes, not only would I like memorize the words and stuff, but I would like make my voice sound like, or I would try.
I
to
think
make
people.
My voice sound
I think
like
you. You're a real people person. Like people tend to
I'm
like you, gravitate towards you, and I think it's because you mimic them back to themselves.
Oh my gosh! I was interviewing. This was Becca when I was interviewing Becca to work for us. She was mirroring me. I would like lean back.
So you were like mirroring.
Yeah, and then I leaned forward and she'd lean forward. And I was like, this is so funny that we're doing this with each other.
Right.
Anyway, funny memory
it's so
there.
So funny.
We started out with a tangent. So anyway, life.
What are we talking? We recording?
We're recording. We're recording. We're live. We started out with a tangent. School's starting up again. It's going to be another stressful year for us. So thanks to everybody who's been supporting the podcast. I know we've had to be spotty about some of our premium stuff, and I just appreciate your support so much as we move into yet another school year during the pandemic. All right. So today we're going to talk about and we're going to talk about a couple things, but the first thing we're going to talk about is how you have customized some of your dog paraphernalia.
Yes.
We did a whole episode on ribbon.
Right.
Customizing things with ribbon.
You know.
And we forgot something.
Everybody needs to have extra ribbon around.
No,
I swear.
People loved it. They were like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this.
I can't believe how much, like, I use ribbon for things.
Okay, Zelda wanted to, like, buy ribbon somewhere. No. We were touring that Montessori school.
Uh-huh.
And there was some ribbon. She's like, can I take this home? I was like, Zelda.
It's not.
So first of all, it's
not like
yours.
You're in the studio.
It's not yours. And then we have that ribbon in the studio, several rolls of it. Like, you know, does she not know this? Like, she comes up here, you know. I guess I got to show her the ribbon.
What was I putting ribbon on? Well, So there's a new puppy in town.
There's a new puppy in town. Well, we talked about Tova, didn't we, on the podcast?
We may have.
Yeah, I think so.
Because last fall, I lost two of my dogs. Had three, lost two. Have one guy left over. We have an elder.
We have a very elder.
Right. I mean, I have an elder. Mallory has an elder. I have an elder.
You know, they're like this. Aren't they like the same age?
Yes.
But my dog's smaller, so she's.
Right. She should last longer.
She should last a little longer.
I mean, in general, right.
They're both on a bunch of medicine.
Okay, so Raz is our elder, and he's, you know, he's 140-pound Great Dane, and he will have I think, a 13th birthday coming up. He just had his 12th birthday in, April?
Yeah.
So that's really old for a Great Dane. Now, we don't even know if that's his real age, but, you know, that's what he was, we were told he was, okay, when we rescued him. Anyway, we have a new dog in town. It's Tova, if she has not been introduced already. And she is a female. And she is, when I was growing up, we called this Heinz 57, but she's only a V8. She has eight dogs in her.
Ah.
We had her DNA done, which is just a riot. Because what someone would have said she was and what she is probably, you know, we would have never figured this out.
Right.
Because she's like a quarter golden retriever. And I don't see a hint of golden retriever except that she's brindle and she's got some gold in her stripe.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, I don't know where you would, like, visually see this golden retriever in this dog, you know. And then she does have a little bit of an underbite because she's part boxer and she is part bulldog. So that comes from that. And then she has kind of a square head and... We're thinking that comes from the part that's this American Staffordshire Terrier. Staffordshire Terrier, or more commonly known and not AKC, you know, certified, would be called a pit bull.
Yeah, she looks like a little pit mix.
I think she looks like a boxer with a long nose. I think she looks like a boxer.
Yeah, she just looks like...
Because her butt...
She's really pretty, and she looks like...
Her butt...
I think that you're just obsessed with your dog. But boxers and pit bulls share a lot of similar...
Well, see, this is the other thing. Dogs share a lot of traits.
Yes,
right,
yes.
Right, right.
I mean, my dog is apparently a pug boxer.
Maybe, we think.
And
right.
But people think, oh, someone just lied and said boxer instead of pit bull due to... You know, zoning and stuff.
Oh,
you know,
right, true.
Haven't gotten her DNA done.
Well, the pit bull part is not a surprise because I don't think there's a dog in mid-Missouri that doesn't have pit bull in it, I swear.
Yeah, it's yes.
Well, except that...
Incredibly common.
Okay, we're going to talk about dogs. Then all my friends have these, like, doodles or poos, right? You know, and
a doodle poo?
Yeah, and I said to Jerry, so maybe she's a rescue doodle or a rescue poo or something because I feel not fashionable not having a poo doodle.
Well, you know what? You are fashionable because your dog is like whatever 2% Welsh Corgi, and
it
that
is, no,
is
three.
A popular
She's three.
That
three.
Is a popular. Mm-hmm. Okay, three. Okay, we have got to get it. We're 8 minutes into this podcast, and I just want to say that we are really dedicated to rescuing animals.
Yes,
and I just can't bring myself to buy one right now. I mean,
right.
I just can't. But I really did want a Welsh Corgi.
She's wanted one for a long time.
There was a litter of Welsh Corgis.
There were.
Up for adoption.
And of course, they were mixed.
Yeah.
We know someone who adopted one.
Well, hold on. Yeah. They were like really cute and stuff. And I passed because the pandemic and everything was really crazy and stuff. But Sam got one of them. So
well,
Sam
and
bam.
That's what I was going to say. And we do know that they wound up looking a lot corgi.
They look super corgi.
Hers looks really very
well,
corgi.
And something else that happens in this area of the country and the state is puppy mills.
Right.
So we think that this was a case...
Where the mom was a puppy mill, and she got pregnant by the wrong dog.
By the wrong dog,
she was
a
corgi that got pregnant by the wrong dog.
Okay, what are you doing with these? Tell everyone what a gentle leader is.
So a gentle leader is a head harness type thing that goes onto a dog. Okay?
Yes.
So especially when I would walk like three Great Dane sized dogs, this was sort of the best. It's like using a bridle, you know, on a horse. Mm-hmm. So they're very commonly used, and they're not like a choke chain or anything like that. But because the head is bridled, now they can still eat, drink, bark, do whatever they want with this on. It's not like a muzzle, but it does go around their nose. And like Mallory's dog can't wear one because she doesn't have a nose.
Use her face.
So if you have a dog with a mushed in face, they don't work very well. Yeah. Right. They can get them right off. Now, her other dog can wear one, but not the one. So anyway, in order to know whose head harness is whose head harness, they come in like two colors, but generally all you can find is black on the market anyway. I think they come in black and like a beige color or something. So in order to know, now they have to be set, you know, their size.
Their size, yeah. You have to size it to the dog.
You size it to the dog's neck and to the dog's, you know, muzzle and all this, okay? So then you just slip it on, you know, and then you use it. Well, when you have three dogs or however many dogs that you have, how do you figure out whose muzzle's who, you know, with quick looking? And what I did is I would sew ribbon on top of the nylon webbing.
Yeah.
Okay, so we knew that Raz was red, you know, and that Jasmine was pink, and actually Reba was just black. I didn't put anything on her.
Yeah.
So now Tova, the new dog, her signature color is teal. So I did sew a teal ribbon on top of her nylon.
Because teal is Tova's signature color.
It is her signature color.
So this nylon webbing is pretty thin.
This is thin. Yeah. I believe it's maybe less than a half inch. I use like 3/8 inch
when
ribbon.
When you sew, also, this stuff is adjustable. So is there a part of the gentle leader where you can just sew, like you don't want to sew all the layers together, right?
No, you don't at all.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you may have to take it apart or sew part and stop and sew another part. You know, so you do have to think about that. You do have to think, I mean, I let the ribbon show.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you can put just ribbon on the very end of it or something.
Sure.
I do the whole, you know, I go around like.
You did the whole thing.
Like Tova's isn't on her nose. It's just on her neck part.
Okay.
So, you know, that's just another way of labeling things. And then the other thing I labeled recently, I think that didn't talk about, was the towels for the pom.
No, we did talk about that.
Did we?
We talked about it on the ribbon episode. But it's a great thing.
You mean across the corner so we knew that? Oh,
what? Tell everyone again.
Okay. Well, you know, so we have towels that are basically were our bath towels that we use in the pond so that we have like a plethora of towels to use when people come over or just for ourselves or whatever, or so that the kids will grab the right towels, or we know what towels when they come out of the laundry are the bath
the
towels.
Pond, yeah.
Right. The pond versus bath towel.
When they come out of the pondry.
The pondry.
You mean out after you pondry. Get done washing and drying the pondry?
The pondry. So I just take a piece of ribbon and put it across the corner. Maybe I did tell this. Now
I'm pretty sure you did. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to bring up something that this just like rang a bell for me because you said that Reba's gentle leader was blank.
Right.
So when you label stuff, like something that's all the same or whatever,
right.
One way of labeling is to not label.
To not label. Right.
And this has come up for me in costuming before, where I'm like, oh, I've got 7 people, so I need like 7 different thing or whatever. And I'm like,
no,
wait,
I
only need 6.
Right.
You know, and that I just want to remind everyone that that's a valid, that, you know, okay, yours is the unmarked one, or you're,
right.
You know, and then you're the red and you're the blue and you're the, you know, whatever.
Right.
So it can just, it doesn't hurt to label them all, but it can save you time. Okay. So that has come up for me before, and I've like forgotten that one way of labeling is to not label.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So anywho, you just said that and, you know, kind of glanced over it, but it's been a thing for me. So I've got 2 dogs. So if I was going to label 2 gentle leaders, I only need to do one.
You only have to do one.
Yeah.
Right. I just, you know, it just helps me
with
things. The other thing that I just did, okay, with ribbon that you don't know about.
Okay. Okay. Hopefully.
Is on the boat, we have ropes, dock yeah. tie downs, ties, whatever you want to call them, dock lines, okay? And we leave them hanging on the back of a seat that has a rail behind it, right? And so we have a certain way that we wrap these up, right? And in order to hang them on the back of this rail, I have what is a two-sided Velcro. So that means the you don't have two pieces of Velcro.
Right.
It's one piece of Velcro, and you loop it over, and it will stick to itself.
Okay.
Okay, so it has a hook side and a loop side on one piece, right? Uh-huh. Both sides are one's full loop and one's full hook, right? Uh-huh. Okay, so you can just put it through something and then, okay, so I used that, but when we did that, we couldn't find the end of the loop all the time very easily or whatever. Yeah. So I just made like a ribbon tab and I made it, you know, this tape happens to be black. So I just made it a color so that, hey, there, I just grabbed that little thing so I can pull that back.
Right, right.
So that was like really, I mean, that like saved us. Honestly, it saved us like all this fret over
sometimes
where's
when you
the thing.
Have something that's like all black like that.
Yeah.
You know, like a black thing going on to another black thing. And then you're outside. And like the light can be weird.
Right.
Or
well, it's just like trying to find the end of the tape on something.
Yes.
And this is really good, tight, secure, you know, Velcro. So it's not like you just run your hand over it and you can find it right away.
Uh-huh.
So that is another thing I did just so you would know.
Okay. We're going to take a little break and come back and answer a question from the group about buttonholes. Hey ZD, wouldn't it be cool if everyone who listened to this podcast could learn how to make perfectly fitting leggings directly from you, the leggings expert?
Well, yes, Mal. That's why we produce the Made to Measure Leggings class. I teach anyone, no matter their age, ability, or gender, to make perfectly fitting leggings based on their measurements. And if someone is feeling particularly generous, they can make leggings for anyone who they can get to stand still long enough to measure.
You, yes, you, can get immediate access to all the videos and course materials in the Made to Measure Leggings class by going to sewhere.com/leggings. This online class allows you to complete the process at your own pace, and you own it forever, so you can rewatch it as many times as you need.
Stop struggling with the leggings that roll down or sag in the wrong places. I'll be your guide as you create leggings that are made especially for you.
No matter what your equipment or skill level, ZD covers everything from measuring, drafting, cutting, and construction on a sewing machine or serger in this class. Go to sewhere.com/leggings and get started today.
Sewing out loud.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we're back. All right. We got a nice question in the group from Margaret H. And she says, help sewing machines. I've been testing buttonholes and I'm not sure which direction the rounded end should go when making horizontal buttonholes. Logic tells me toward the opening of the dress back, but I'm not 100% sure. And Google has not helped. So, you know, someone answered that question and said, normally on the back of a dress, the buttonholes are vertical.
Yes.
But, I mean, I've seen I've seen them horizontal. I've seen it.
No, I mean, you know, all of the traditional rules about buttonholes. Right. Okay, and like, you know, the men's supposed to, you know, the men's supposed to flap over this way, and what is the men's supposed to be left over the right, and the woman's right over left, or whatever. I can't remember anymore. Who cares?
Okay, the women's is right over left.
That's what I said.
Right. Okay. I just had to say it again because I'm just visualizing it.
And supposedly that was because, you know,
somebody else was dressing
someone
you.
Someone else dressed the woman. Yes, whatever.
And who gives a bleep anymore?
Nobody
cares. No one cares.
What I care about is, does the garment lay properly?
Yeah. So
that is my, that would should be the only concern. And yes, that person I think might be maybe right. But I hesitate there, too, because you get more gapping generally with a vertical button.
Yeah. So here's the deal. A buttonhole that has the keyhole at the, you know, at one end or something.
Which looks like it's rounded.
Right. Rounded. Right. Okay. That's supposed to be where the button ultimately sits.
Rest.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. And so it would, in this case, be pointing toward the center of the garment. Okay.
Well. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's saying it's down the back of a dress.
Okay.
Okay.
So what? When you say that, that doesn't help me though. I would say it points towards the edge of the fabric. Because when you say center,
yeah, like the center back.
It
of the
should
garment.
Be in the center,
no,
right?
It points toward the center of the garment. It doesn't point toward the side of the garment,
right?
Okay.
Well, points towards the other side.
Oh.
I don't know, but yes.
Okay, edge of the fabric is, you're right, you're right. That's a more universal way to put it.
I think it's a safer way,
no,
maybe.
You're correct.
Okay, so what you have to do is think about the fact of where the button rests.
Yes.
Because it's never going to rest in the middle of the buttonhole.
On a horizontal button.
And that's why so the only place I really know that I'm really more secure in saying a vertical buttonhole belongs is in a placket, because the placket is narrow and you need it to go up and down.
Yeah, because like, okay, on the back, I see this on, I feel
and,
like.
And, well, and you cannot get the button to rest in the middle of the placket if it's going horizontally.
Right, that's right. So these keyhole buttonholes are designed to be horizontal ones. You're really not supposed to use.
Yes, and generally.
Or at least.
Well, and generally they're considered to be used with a button with a shank.
Yep.
Okay, that's why they have that rounded extra space.
It's,
because
it's
you have a shank
it.
On the button, not just the thread shank that you make. Right.
So this is another, I think it's a really common mistake that I've made before. You were talking about take into account where the button is going to rest.
Right.
So on my first pair of jeans, I screwed this up, right? So think about the button at the top of the fly, right? And mom is just nodding her head like juicily. Okay. She's just, so you can't see. It's just like, she's like, yes. I know. So there's all sorts of things that go through your brain when you're doing your first buttonhole on a pair of jeans, and you're like, is this going to work? Is it, you know, is it too thick? Is it, well, I got to find the center of the waistband, and I got to find the center of this, and I'm going to chalk up the bejesus out of this thing, you know? And so you're like looking at these jeans on the table, and you might not be thinking about how they're actually going to go on your, on your body, right? So anyway, where that button is going to kind of pull over and rest in that, let's pretend I did a rounded buttonhole, okay, like with a keyhole buttonhole or a buttonhole with a rounded end or something. That rounded part should go at the center of, like, where everything crosses over. Like, it should be at center front.
If that's where you expect your button
to
be,
go.
Wherever you want your button to land.
Right.
where it's going to sit or rest or land should be that circle. And the reason you see that type of buttonhole most often on a pair of jeans is they usually have that big shank.
Shanky button.
Right, right. It's that big metal shank that you have, you know, beat it on.
Yeah. You've hammered it in place.
You had to hammer it on.
So
right.
it's making that area more, it's reinforcing it.
Well, it's reinforcing it, and it's bigger.
It
allows for more space.
Making room.
Okay, so the rest of the button only has to accommodate the head of the button. Mm-hmm. And then that rounded part is accommodating the shank. So know that if there's a shape to the buttonhole, it probably has some function.
Well, you know, or somebody just like designed some buttonhole, you know, and thought it was fun.
Well, there can be such a thing originally. As a decorative buttonhole.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is a reason on jeans that you see a keyhole button.
So what I did and what I think, excuse me, a lot of people do wrong is they will test out their buttonhole. And then they'll, like, center the whole thing.
You're expecting... So what happened to you is you were thinking, oh, my buttonhole will rest in the middle of my button will rest in the middle of my button.
That's right. That's right. So then what happens is that whole part got too close to the edge of the fabric.
Right.
Not the center of the garment. Okay.
Right.
So it got too close to the edge of the fabric is where I put it. I put it kind of, like, right there, you know. And then... So my jeans, when I put them on, and the buttonhole slides over to, I think, how do jeans, I don't even know, I haven't worn
it
jeans.
It depends. I've had them both ways.
Yeah, I think however way you've done the fly, right?
I don't think that women were being dressed in jeans.
Yeah.
Go ahead. By other people.
It looked too... My jeans were spread apart a little bit at the top. Now, it wasn't terrible.
Right,
like,
right,
you know, it
right.
wasn't that bad.
Depending on how big your buttonhole was.
Well, sure.
If you had a big button, and farther apart, right.
Exactly, because you got to make your buttonhole accommodate your button. Now, when I made Derek a couple pairs of shorts a couple summers ago, and she's still wearing, I didn't use those riveted buttons.
Right.
He is so hard on his clothes, as we've discussed, that those were ripping out. And so I used... like a coat button, and sewed it with like thread, you know, and I made a little bit of a shank to it, but I sewed it with some thicker thread, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this because I think it might actually be more durable for him and, you know, whatever.
Exactly. And my problem with those buttons is I'm allergic to the metal.
You have a problem with those. Yeah.
So when I would get a pair of jeans, you know, ready to wear that were like that, I would take a little piece of fabric and sew it over the back of that. Now, I know people that used to put a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, I sewed something on to solve my problem.
Sure.
But I prefer having, you know, a button that is sewn with thread.
Yeah, you know, and I was like, why wouldn't I do this? And it seems like it's going to be fine. And so, anyway, you don't – so that
– So the riveted button – can just pull off your jeans.
Yeah, that too. Right. Yeah, they can be. It can be a pain, and they can
be hard
for people.
You've actually made a hole in your fabric to put it on.
A big old hole for that big tack to go through. Right. Yeah, you're totally right. And they can be just such a pain in the butt, you know, to put on.
Right.
And especially when I.
Well, I think it's funny sometimes because people say they like the look, and then they put a belt over it.
Yeah, or like,
you know, or it's never seen.
Well,
anyway or
there's
whatever,
a lot more like tucking in of shirts nowadays than there was like 5-10 years ago.
Well, of course.
You know,
obviously it goes in.
Well, and now jeans. So I don't really know what's fashionable these days.
Is there a pair of jeans made that doesn't have Lycra in them anymore?
Yes, they're coming back.
Really?
Okay, it's high waisted.
Okay, I won't be wearing them. Just so y'all know.
No, they're high waisted and super loose, like skinny jeans.
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
They're more like trousers.
Any millennials out there like me? We're out of fashion with our skinny jeans.
I don't
know
if anybody knows who Chelsea Handler is, but she did a whole thing making fun of the mom jean that was back.
Yeah.
Right, and she is very fit, very muscular,
okay?
And she made this whole, like, ranting thing about, you know, how funny mom jeans were. Her skinny jeans were all she was ever going to wear. And then she tried on a pair of these mom jeans, and she's like, they're wonderful, you know? And then she does a whole thing about how she was a fool not to know mom jeans were wonderful.
I tried on at a store some, like, linen pants that had, like, an elasticated waist.
Yeah.
And... you know, I think they were probably, like, fine, okay on me. But for my body shape and like how I want my body to look, it just really accentuated my kind of straight waist. And I ended up taking them back. I was like, you know, well, I wanted to participate.
And sometimes that's also where that waist lands on your body. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe had it been higher or lower, it would have been better for you.
Right. And a lot of people
love that sack top, they call it.
Yeah.
And other people just hate it. It's just the look you prefer or how it winds up looking on your body or whatever.
They were not like quite that extreme, but they were like on that spectrum. And like, I just like. Yeah, they're just not for me. And then I put on like leggings and sort of like my it's a little bit of like a longer button up shirt, and I was like, man, I just like so much better the way I look in this outfit that it's just not worth it
so
for
you
me
wear
to like
what
try
you like.
The other one.
So
you know?
Wear what you believe you look best in.
Well,
and that makes it more comfortable.
You know, and that's what I was like, you know, if I wore this out somewhere, no one would even think a thing about.
You know what?
And somebody one's paying attention.
No, somebody
you know?
Would probably compliment you on it.
Well,
you'd
right.
Go, what?
Like, I love those pants. Yeah,
right.
Who knows? Anyway.
Right.
So that's.
The lady that told me about my beautiful hair today when I had it pulled back in a ponytail, and I thought I was going
You've
like
got nice hair. Mom.
I thought I was going raggy, you know. Yeah. She's like, "You have beautiful hair." Oh, thank
so
you.
So I'm all I'll thank just say, you. I'm all insecure about my hair right now. I've bought lots of things to try and make it nicer, and who knows if anything's going to work. But I started taking biotin, and my nails are growing so fast it's annoying. Like. I have to trim them like every day. So anyway, it's working on my nails. So that's nice. Anywho, we're gonna end with a tangent. Okay. Are you gonna bring it back to sewing?
Tangenting pants.
That was on topic. That was clothes. Okay. So buttonholes. That's why you get those keyhole buttonholes. You can use them for fun. You can do whatever you want because it's just the Wild West out there now with clothes. Anybody?
Well,
can
right.
Do
I mean,
want.
You know, you can use any buttonhole anywhere, any shape. But can think about how you're trying to close something.
Yeah.
And you want it to lie flat and you don't want to pucker and you don't, you know, you need to think about that. Lay that fabric flat and know that that buttonhole will not stay in the middle of that, or that button stay in the middle of the button if it's a horizontal buttonhole, right?
It's going to go over. So just to reiterate, so these horizontal buttonholes at the back of this dress, I think I was envisioning the back of this dress having like rather large buttons on it. I have no
idea
if that's the
case. And
that
might be true. She may have, this might have been truly, truly a big decorative thing for her.
But here's the other thing about the big buttons. You need to put that button wherever you want it in relation to the edge of the fabric.
That's right.
And then mark where that's going to get sewn down.
That's where the end of the buttonhole goes. Another thing happened today.
Oh, wait, hold on. Because you could think, I'll put this buttonhole, because I think I may have misspoke earlier when I said on the jeans to put that hole kind of like at center front, because really you need to put the button where you want it.
Right.
And then do it. Because if this button on the back of her dress, I'm just making this up in my mind, but if you just envision like a rather large button.
Right.
If she were to put that buttonhole, you know, too far over toward the edge of the fabric, it's like the button could overlap onto the other side.
That's right. So you know, lay these things out.
Yeah.
Look at the size of your button. Close up your jeans, close them like you want, and go, I want my
button
here. You make a little mark or something. You lay the button there. Is it going to look okay? Is that where you really want it?
Yeah.
Right? So, what you said might have screwed them up a little bit.
Yes, I think maybe I really kind of
like sometimes I know what you're talking about.
Apologies. Don't screw up your jeans because of me.
So, just think about placement, and you don't want it to gap. And it is going to pull to the end of the buttonhole.
Yeah, and if you are using, so here's the deal. You know, we say, oh, it would be vertical back there or something. Well, if it's a big old button that requires a large buttonhole,
you don't want
it to be vertical. Because on the back of a dress, if you bring your shoulders forward, there will be stress on that garment.
That's right.
And a vertical buttonhole would gape open, you know, versus that horizontal one will just kind of like hold.
See, this
in place,
is what people who
you know?
Don't sew don't realize
don't
how much thought process that you all put into all of that to make
that's
it
right.
look great.
And you are learning so much every time you try stuff out like this.
So I have another tangent. I can't help it. I got to say it because it happened today.
Do
so
it.
We went bra shopping today for my granddaughter. And she's very big busted. So we go to the bra store is what we call it. And we actually travel there. We go there. It takes us an hour and 15 minutes to get there. It's where I bought a lot of my bras in my lifetime. And, you know, they are a bra shop. This is all they do. Bras and swimming suits, right? So I needed to be fitted again also for a sports bra. And I'm being fitted, and this lady, the lady told me, you haven't been here since 2004. Yeah. I'm like, sorry. Yeah. But anyway, so she says, so she said something about suits, and I said, oh, I don't really wear the traditional swimming suit, and, you know, blah, blah. And I said, I've had melanoma, and, you know.
You all know.
Right. So anyway, I said, I keep a couple of sports bras that I use to swim in under my rash guard. And guess what she says? Where do you get your rash guards?
Oh,
and what did I say? I make them.
I'll tell you, ZD.
Yeah, you know, she just couldn't handle it. She was like floored that I swam in some shirt I made. It was really funny.
Well, I'm just not surprised, Mom. People are just but always impressed with you.
I think y'all would have enjoyed that.
Yeah. I was just telling somebody recently, well, I think it was the cosmetologist who was doing my, I'm getting my mustache permanently removed. I'll let you know how it goes. You know, I was telling her, because they're always like, protect yourself from the sun. I was like, you don't even know how protected from the sun I am.
Right.
You know, so anyway, I was telling her about our rash guards, and she thought that was pretty cool. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. You can follow us on Instagram. We're at SoHereCom. ZD, take it away.
So long and so happy.
Thanks for listening to Sewing Out Loud. For even more expert sewing advice, visit sewhere.com.